Hello and welcome to the new season of the Honey Kids Asia podcast, bringing you the parenting playbook. My name's Jaz and I'm a mum of two toddlers and the editor at Honey Kids Asia. We're excited to kick off the season with engaging discussions and expert guests who will help us navigate the ups and downs of modern parenting.
So today's topic is so interesting, and I feel like the moment I talked about it and started posting about it to fellow mom friends as well, I got a lot of like, oh my goodness, I really need this because, you know, it's chaotic in my home at the moment and I really don't want to yell, but sometimes we really absolutely have to because the kids are not listening and all that. So I totally understand. We've got such a great discussion lined up, and it's not just about how to stop yelling at your kids, but also understand why it is that we do it. And our upcoming guest is going to be just perfect for it because she already does content on it on her own Instagram, and she's like so helpful to a lot of Asian and Singaporean parents, not just here in Singapore but all over the world as well. So I'm going to try and invite her now. Okay, great. Yes, I hear you. Great. Hi everybody. Let's all welcome Kelly Tay, who is our guest for today on this exciting topic called How to Stop Yelling at Your Kids. I'm Shaz, the editor of Honey Kids Asia, and as you know, we've been doing quite a few of these parenting playbook live sessions already, so we're really grateful that you're joining us today. Kelly is actually a former journalist, parent educator, and also a children's book author. So as I mentioned before, her Instagram is chock full of so much amazing content for parents, both in Singapore and internationally, and it addresses all things like Asian parenting, but doing it in a firm yet kind way, which I love. So Kelly, I think it would be great for you to start off with telling us about your journey of how you actually started this whole firm yet kind parenting journey before you created your Instagram account and then went on this whole journey of teaching other parents as well.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Shaz, for having me, and thanks everyone for tuning in. So how I got to this is actually, even before I became a parent, I learned about respectful parenting. I learned that there is a way to raise kids without having to yell at them, without having to hit them. And at the time when I discovered this, I was just like, sounds good. I want to do this when I become a parent. And then I became a parent. And then everything changed because everything I had learned that in theory sounded good kind of just went out the window when I became a parent, because I quickly realized that I only know how to parent the way I was parented. And that is based on how my grandparents parented my parents. And that is based on how my great-grandparents parented them, and so on and so forth. And so generationally, we've been used to very harsh parenting. Just because you have the intention that you want to do differently doesn't mean you're actually going to do differently. And so I got into this journey. I kind of had a reset. I knew about it, but I didn't know how to implement. And then so when I became a mom, I went, you know, I used to be a journalist. I put on my research nerd hat and started like really studying this stuff. Like I paid thousands, honestly, I don't even want to say the true amount. It was so much money. I did so many courses, so many hours of studying. And what I found really interesting was I didn't come to it thinking, oh, I want to learn how to be respectful. I just came to it with like, okay, let's learn about sleep. Let's learn about gross motor development. Let's learn about brain development. Let's learn about all the things. And what I quickly found was the things that were common, the threads that were common that resonated with me, was seeing your child as a whole person. It kind of went back to the stuff I already knew, but I didn't know how to do. And so when I was learning the stuff, I started learning, okay, this is how I can do it. And as I started to implement it, people, you know, friends, strangers at playgrounds would ask me like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you talking to your daughter at the time, a very young baby like this? For example, I would tell her, hey, a wet wipe's coming. I'm going to wipe your bum. And they're just like, she doesn't understand you. Why are you telling her this? And so we have these conversations and they would be like, wow, that's very cool. Can you teach me? And I'm like, I don't teach, but I can give you all the courses, all the books, all the scholarly articles I'm reading. And constantly people are like, I don't have the time and I don't have the interest to go through all of this. I'm not a research nerd myself. Can you just give me a condensed version? So for the longest time, I was like, no, I mean, it's there. Just go read it yourself. But then I started to realize that actually a lot of the things that I was learning, while applicable, they were not fully applicable in Asian context because they're so different. It's so different, like hearing a Caucasian person say something based on a Caucasian environment with like family structure, with generational values that have been passed down. It's just so different. And so I was like, huh, maybe I do have something new to say. I think I can do something that is tailored specifically for Asian parents. And so that was my personal journey getting into respectful parenting, and then the professional journey to actually educating, like being a parent educator. And it's quite a big jump from like journalism, and then I worked in a bank, and then now this. But I really do think that it's hands down, most fulfilling journey. So that's the story of how I got to it.
Amazing. And yeah, I think there's definitely something to be said about tailoring it to our Asian context, because we are so, you know, we've got so much information out there, and a lot of it comes from the Western world, because, you know, people over there have been creating blogs about respectful parenting for a long time and all that. But in our context, it's so difficult for us to even relay such ideas to our parents, you know, to explain to them like, no, we don't do that now. We don't do that in this house. So like, you know, this is how we do things moving forward. And they're just like, but why? Like, you know, and the common, I feel like the most common response to that is always what? But last time I do for you, then you big already what? You know, like you turned out fine, you know, but then we have to really do the extra work of like, no, but we really want to be able to speak to our kids a certain way, so that when, you know, it's a long game, and eventually they will come back to us and really find us again, not just because we are caregivers, not that just because we provide for them, but because they enjoy having our emotional connection with them, which is so important. So, which always goes back to the reason why we yell in the first place. So we're going to be talking about like certain things like common triggers, the difference between disciplining and losing control, and then recognizing also our own personal stresses that actually trigger these responses that we have to our young kids at home. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, about why exactly parents yell.
Yeah, sure. So why exactly parents yell is a very layered question, actually. I mean, first of all, a lot of times I want to, right off the bat, kind of get rid of this misconception that we yell because our kids are being bad. If you ask most parents, they'll be like, yeah, I yell because they did this. You know, they did something that caused me to yell. And right off the bat, I just want to say, no, we need to own our stuff. We need to own the fact that we yell because we've lost control, because we don't know how to process our own rage well, and we take it out on our kids. And I also want to say off the bat, it's not our fault. I don't want anyone to hear this and be like, oh no, I feel so bad, I'm a terrible parent, da da da. The fact is, we all do this, myself included. And the reason is because of what we were raised with. So that is our template for how we respond to kids. Anytime there's quote unquote disobedience, a tantrum, it's very normal. You're not alone. It's not just you. And so I want to start with that, because I think a lot of times people focus on we yell because our kids did this. But actually we yell because we don't know how to process our emotions and we don't know how to stay calm. That's at the heart of it. So if we go one step further, right? We yell because we're triggered by something. And oftentimes, we are triggered by things that we were not allowed to do when we were kids. So for example, if a kid is crying very loudly and for a very long time and in public and people are watching, it's a stressful situation, right? And for us, subconsciously, I'm not saying we're doing this consciously, but subconsciously, we're remembering before when we were kids, if we had done that, wakana hantam. No way. Right? There's no way we would have been allowed to throw a fit and whatever. And so when we see our children doing it, it brings up these feelings of like, oh my goodness, something bad's going to happen. The last time this happened, I gonna wept. And so there's this feeling of stop this at all costs. Again, it's not conscious. It's something that just triggers us. And that's why it's called a trigger. And so it's almost like we are operating as adults. We're in our 20s, we're in our 30s, we're in our 40s, but our brain is operating like a scared five-year-old. And the last time they threw a tantrum, there was hell to pay. And so we think we're operating like a parent, like an adult, but actually our nervous system is so in fight or flight or freeze that we're just like, stop it at all costs. And then we yell. So that's one big thing. We were not allowed to do X, Y, Z that we now see our child doing. And that's why we're triggered. Another thing is also in my work with clients, I've noticed one big trigger for yelling is repeating ourselves. Where we feel that, dude, I have said it once, twice, 10 times. I don't want to have to say it again, right? And then we start yelling. Like the maybe by the third time we say it, by the fourth time, sometimes for the more patient ones, by the 10th time. And then we really blow up. So I think what's really important about these things is to notice that we are getting there. So don't even allow ourselves to get there. Just start noticing, just being aware. And I think if we want to look at the reason for it, again, goes back to our childhood. Where when we have to repeat ourselves, essentially what's happening is we don't feel like we're being heard, right? It's this feeling of, I have to repeat it because you're clearly not getting it. And if you're clearly not getting it, then you're not understanding me. And again, this triggers very, very deep childhood feelings of like, oh my gosh, nobody understands me. I have to shout. I have to scream. Don't make me repeat myself. And then we're slowly getting more and more resentful with every repetition. We're like, until jiba boom, explode, die. So it's really about, you know, noticing that you are getting there and noticing that repetition is a source of stress for you. And just even that awareness can help. And then you can kind of safeguard and be like, okay, if I know this is where I'm going with repetition, how do I not have to repeat myself? So I think, you know, yelling really, it's not something super conscious. It is often our inner child kind of like fighting back what we're seeing with our real child. And it's also, you know, common triggers like having to repeat myself, feeling that I don't feel heard. Those are really, really big reasons why people yell. And I guess I want to round this off by saying that, you know, I don't think anyone wants to yell at their kids, right? Like, I've worked with so many parents. There's not a single one who comes to me and says like, I love yelling. This feels so good. Love it. No one.
Yeah, of course. The feeling afterwards is so dreadful. And it's, oh my gosh, the mom guilt, the parent guilt, the, oh my goodness, like, and the fact that you can't take it back as well. Once it's out there, it's like a huge thing that you cannot see, but it's just echoing in the home or wherever it is that you are, that just keeps, in Malay, there's this term called terngiang-ngiang, like it keeps echoing in your ear, even though it's not there anymore. So that's like, it's definitely what happens, not just for the parent, but of course for the kids as well. So, you know, I think a really big thing to understand as well is how yelling actually affects young kids. And it happens a lot, you know, because it's usually the younger kids that are a bit more, I don't want to label, but you know, it's usually the younger kids that may take a little bit more time to actually listen, and then after that continue to heed whatever it is you're telling them to do. So what would you say are the effects of yelling on a child's brain development and also like well-being? Are there any like potential long-term consequences? Why is it that they tend to tune out when we yell? What would you say about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm actually doing a neuroscience course now taught by two neuroscientists about the brain and how from 0 to 3 in this young age, it kind of sets the template for how resilient your child's brain is going to be for the rest of their life in this 0 to 3 age. And we can wire their brain for lifelong mental health or lifelong predisposition to mental illness. So it's quite interesting, actually, just in the 0 to 3 age. And, you know, the effects on the brain are actually huge. So what happens when we yell at a kid is their nervous system starts going into overdrive, because how they see us is we are their source of safety. And when that source of safety is threatened, I mean, you think about it, they depend on us for food, shelter, water, everything to survive. And when their source of safety is starting to escalate, their nervous system becomes very activated. And when that happens consistently over time, what happens is that the brain centers that are in charge of this kind of survival mode brain grow a lot bigger. They start to perceive the world as a threat because their source of safety that they know from 0 to 3 is a source of threat. And then it just escalates. And I want to also be clear that anyone listening to this is like, oh no, I've damaged my child's brain. It's not the case. The key here is consistency. So if you're always doing this and you are making no effort to repair, because let's be clear, right? In my book, I say that, you know, you're a human, not a robot. You will make mistakes. It's okay. It's okay to fail. It's okay. The important thing is going back to repair with your child after you have yelled. So please don't walk away from this being like, oh no, Kelly said that my child's brain is damaged, I'm screwed. No point trying. It's not true. It's just about, can we make it so that it's not consistent? And if we have been in a pattern of consistently yelling, can we start repairing and rebridging those bonds so that our child returns to a safety state and that they can move forward with a new relationship with you and be like, okay, there's a way forward. I trust my parent. They are not a source of stress for me. We can do this. And so, you know, I also want to make clear that the research is clear, not just from the West. There have also been research studies from Asia, most recently one from NUS Yale and the Children's Society in Singapore, that talked about, you know, the long-lasting effects of harsh parenting, including yelling, but also physical punishments on kids, and how in the long run, it actually leads to less emotional regulation. It leads to kids who are often more ragey and who are less able to kind of get a read on their feelings and kind of like bring everything down, and overall less resilience in total. So a lot of times, you know, how you said like parents would be like, but I raise you, you're fine. people are just like, yeah, we're fine, we're functioning. But I think as parents, we want to shoot for more than fine. We want to shoot for thriving. We don't want to shoot just for surviving. And also, what's your definition of fine, right? Like if your definition of fine is, I went to a good school, I got a good degree, I got a good job, that's great. But how do you deal with things like rage? How do you deal with disappointment when things don't go your way? And if we're honest with ourselves, honestly, most of us, because we were all raised like this, we don't really have a lot of emotional regulation skills. We have a lot of coping skills and a lot of suppressing skills, but we don't really have regulation skills. And so if we want our kids to be different, then the world starts with us.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That just spoke to my inner child. The childhood trauma just like playing back in my head, unintentionally. But yeah, I think it leads very nicely into the next part of the conversation as well. And it just nice person called Tar Celeste in our comments has just asked as well, how to repair with kids after yelling. So it would be great if you could share with us some practical strategies to stay calm and then like not resort to that. Because, you know, like you said, it's usually like 10 steps before you actually get there and the crescendo that goes up there, right? So we want to try and maybe nip it in the bud before it gets to a point where it's like, oh, now it's out there, I can't take it back. But if it does happen, what should we do?
Yeah, love it. Tyre Celeste, I love that you're asking this question because it actually is the most realistic question to ask. A lot of times people would be like, how do I not yell? But the fact is we're humans, right? We are going to blow up and it's okay. We are allowed to be angry. I think society has this twisted mentality, especially for mothers, that you cannot be angry. If you're an angry mother, you're a bad mother. No, all feelings are okay. It's just what you do with the feeling. So let's say we've already had an explosion. We've already yelled and we want to go back and repair. The first most important thing to do is make sure that you are truly ready to repair. So a lot of times parents want to repair because they know, I shouldn't have done that. But they're like not in an emotional place where they're ready. And then it comes out very half-hearted. It's like, yeah, sorry, I yelled. It's like, that's not a true repair, right? So number one, take some time, take some space, make sure that you are ready to come with the repair. And then secondly, I think it's important to get really good at apologizing. And what I mean by this is making sure that you apologize without saying things like, yeah, I'm sorry I yelled at you just now, but you were doing this thing. That's why I had to yell. That's not really an apology anymore because you're now qualifying why the apology has to happen. You're now saying, I'm sorry, but it's actually your fault. That's not really an apology. It's pretty gaslighty. And truth be told, I'm not good at this. Like I wasn't, okay, now I'm pretty good at it. But at the beginning, I wasn't good at it. In my course, I actually have like a 5-step framework. Oh man, it's crazy. Because I had to teach myself how to apologize. Because no adult ever apologized to me when I was a kid. So if no one did it for us, how are we supposed to know? Which is why I love your question, Tyre Celeste, because it's like, yeah, we actually don't know how to repair. We don't know how to apologize. And so I actually had to break it down to 5 steps, which I now teach my clients. And it's like, it's really important to realize the first thing is take some time, right? It's very long, 5 steps, but I'll give you a condensed version. So take some time. Number two, make sure it is not conditional. So remove all ifs, ands, and buts. No, I'm sorry I yelled because you. I'm sorry I yelled, but you were, right? None of that. It's just, I'm sorry I yelled, period. And you really have to own, you have to own the fact that, yes, it was you that yelled, right? Your child could have been doing whatever and you could have been justified in being angry, but it still doesn't necessitate yelling. There's a different way to deal with it. And then also I would say, when you apologize and after you've owned your thing, you need to be very clear on like, what are you going to do next time that's different? It cannot just be, I'm apologizing and now I'm done. And especially with older kids, you will hear them say, yeah, but you always apologize and you always do it later. And even as parents, we say that to our kids. We're tempted to say it. We want to be like, yeah, you already said you won't hit your brother, but you still did. So what are you going to do differently next time? Right? So reverse that onto ourselves. It's really important that after we apologize without a conditional apology, we really apologize and we own it. And then we say, next time I'm going to. And this is where the emotional regulation skills are important, because if you don't know what you're going to do differently next time, then there's nothing to say. So it's really important to model for your child, this is what I'm going to do differently. And then actually it's super powerful because not only are you kind of, if there was a rift before, you are re-bridging that connection. It's not just that, you're also modeling for your child what they can do differently next time. So for example, I'm going to make sure that as I feel myself getting frustrated, I'm going to take a pause, right? Just even in that one line is really powerful because your kid is hearing, oh, there is such a thing as being aware before the explosion happens. I can actually notice my feelings before I get there. That's the first part. And then second part, oh, I can do something about it. It's not inevitable that I have to explode. And then number three, what do I do? Oh, I can take a pause. I can take a pause. I can reconnect with myself. I can make sure that I feel more centered, and then I can continue the conversation, right? So even in that one line, we are teaching our kids so much, and it's so much better than just having a like, you know, I think what's very common is people yell and then they think, oh yeah, no need to repair lah. My kid seems fine. Don't need to say anything. Why bring up these uncomfortable feelings again? But actually, the truth is, it's so important to repair. Our kids may look like they're fine and they're great. Kids are so resilient and so wonderful at coping with adversity that a lot of times we take it for granted that they're okay. But imagine if you rewind back 20, 30 years, if you think about your child, yourself as a child, and you think about a time where your parent lashed out at you, and you just imagine, you just close your eyes and you just imagine them walking through the door and coming to you and really owning it and being like, you know what? Just now when I came and I shouted at you, it was really scary for you. And I recognize it was scary for you and I shouldn't have shouted. And I'm very sorry for shouting. And next time what I'm going to do is notice I'm getting angry and I'm going to take a breath, or I'm going to pause, or I'm going to do whatever. Whatever it is that you have decided is your thing, you say that. So you imagine, what would that have meant to you if your parent had done that? Right? It would have meant everything. It would have been priceless. And that's the opportunity we have before ourselves. I'm not saying it's easy. It's totally doable though, and it is totally worth it for the relationship you get to build with your child.
Yeah. Oh my God. It makes me emotional. Because like I always try to do that as well, you know, like genuinely apologize, and I always get choked up when I do it. And I don't want to scare my kids while we are doing that, because they're like, why are you crying? You were the one that yelled at me. Hello. You know, but then it's because we have to work on, you know, calming down, being at a very even level after all of that has just happened. And then after that, owning it, like you said, and apologizing genuinely and all that, which exactly like you said, we wish we had been treated that way when we were younger. So then remembering all of those moments that you didn't get that when you were a child is so, so emotional.
So I think it's so normal. And I think a lot of times, you know, you were like, I don't want to scare my child. It's a very common thing for people to say, oh no, I shouldn't cry in front of my child. It's going to freak them out. Actually, I'm the total opposite. So my stance is that it's okay to cry in front of your child. And it's okay as long as you're communicating what's going on and you're being clear, it's independent of them. They are not causing you pain. They are not causing you this kind of internal strife. It's something that you are going through. And then it's an opportunity to, again, talk about emotional regulation and literacy and tell them that, you know, it's bringing up a lot of feelings for me because when I was a kid, no one apologized to me. And you're not sharing this to make them feel bad for you. You're just sharing it so that they know what's going on in your internal world. Because if you cry in front of a child, and you don't talk about what's going on, it's scary for them. It is true. It is scary. When they have no idea what's going on, it is scary because they immediately start to project and think it's me. Their only conclusion, children are very simple. Their only conclusion is, I caused this. But if we can tell them, I'm getting emotional right now because it's bringing up a lot of feelings for me. It has nothing to do with you. And it's okay for mama to cry. It's okay for mama to be sad. I know how to take care of myself and I will know how to feel better later. And I will tell you when I feel better. That's very, very different from holding back tears and your child's still like, dude, you look weird. Something's going on. Or full on crying, but not addressing it, right? I think it's important to be just very transparent with our kids. And every time I say this, people are like, but my kid's too young, Kelly. They're only one, they're only two, they're only three. They're not going to understand. I'm like, no, they understand so much more than you think. And if we want them to have this kind of emotional literacy and regulation skills, it starts now. It starts from us modeling this from the youngest of ages. And then as they grow, they're like, oh, it's not weird actually to cry. I don't have to suppress my feelings. I've seen my mom do it. I know it's not about me. I know it's not about this other person when I cry. I'm just taking a moment for myself right now. And I think that's a really, really powerful way to set our kids up for that kind of success and allow us to be truly our authentic selves with our kids rather than pretending to be robots that don't have feelings. You know, okay, so there's this page in the book that it was really interesting. So it's this page. I don't know if it's mirrored, but it's the boy is crying, right? So the world may say, don't cry. And then the other side says, but I believe it's okay to cry. You're a human, not a robot. But the interesting thing that I want to talk about is, do you notice how the mom is crying too? So when Chloe Chang is the brilliant illustrator of this book, when we were going through this, she drew the mom crying and I loved it. I didn't even question it because I cry all the time. And I was just like, great, love it. When we sent it out for first viewer, like first looks for people to give us feedback, consistently people were like, why is the mom crying too? This is so scary for a child. It is frightening for the child if the child is crying and the mom is crying too. And I realized, oh my goodness, we have so much work to do to kind of educate people on feelings are okay. If we are telling our kids it's okay to cry, it has to be okay for us to cry. How are they going to believe us that it's okay to cry if we walk around like robots all the time with no feelings, right? It's okay to cry. And it was important for Chloe and I. We were like, no, we're leaving in the crying mom. It's important for her to cry because it's showing that she's human too and that she can be with you in your sadness. I'm not saying you have to cry with your kid. I'm saying if it does happen, it's actually a good thing. It's not something to be feared. You just have to talk about it. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. Because you mentioned the crying thing. I was just like, oh my gosh, I need to talk about this.
No, it's such a good point to touch on because like you really just don't realize how layered this entire thing is until you break it down that way, you know, and how it's essentially killing two birds with one stone. You know, if we do take the action to actually take back, not take back, but try and repair after we've already done the yelling, and then also show that I'm really upset that I did that to you and I'm so, so sorry. And it further shows the child as well, like, wow, like it's really genuine. Mom is not just, you know, putting up a front for me, trying to hold back tears and stuff. I can see it. You know, and then we're both crying and it's like, but you know, eventually we move on from that and it gets better, especially with younger kids. Like you said, they are so good at dealing with adversity and their adaptability is truly amazing. And how they bounce back from certain things, it's just like immediate, because a lot of it for them is such an immediate, like, okay, I want to be okay again. And I want to, you know, be, you know, myself again. And if together with the parent, you can happily do that without any sort of baggage or resentment from the parent continuing that way, then of course it's such an amazing way to move forward as a family. Yeah. I think one of the points that you mentioned just now about how, like, you know, when you're trying to repair what it is that you have just yelled about, and one of the points is that you have to genuinely also say what you are going to do differently next time. What if you're not exactly sure what you will do next time? Like, how do you say it without, you know, saying for the sake of saying and being like, is there a way for a parent to be like, I'm so sorry that I did that. I don't know how it's going to be different the next time because I just don't have the answers right now, but I'm trying my best. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. So I would say, number one, go get educated. Like, educate yourself. There are answers everywhere. I teach a course, but it doesn't have to be me. You could literally borrow a book from the library for free and just educate yourself on, like, okay, what are some other techniques I could use? Since no one modeled it for me, we have to educate myself, right? Ourselves, myself. So I think number one, when you are aware that, like, oh, wait a minute, I actually don't know what I can do differently next time, that's a big gap. Find a way to close that gap. Number two, in the meantime, while you are reading this book, while you're coming to take my course, as you are learning and you genuinely don't know what to do, it is okay to tell your child, you know, I really want to improve. I want to do things differently next time. I really don't know what that looks like right now. And I'm committing to you that I'm finding the answer. And when I do know, I will come back to you. So being very, very transparent and very clear and respecting your child as a whole person who deserves that answer, being very transparent and just being like, you know what, I don't know. And I will find out. And again, this is modeling for them what to do when they've done something that needs to be made right, but they don't know how. It's like, it's okay to not know. It is your responsibility to find out, to make it right. And it is your responsibility to communicate that. So again, it's modeling for them. So there's absolutely, again, I'm really like, no, say no to perfectionist parenting. It's okay to not know. And it's okay to let your kid you don't know. It's very damaging, actually, to kind of like set up this dynamic where our kid thinks we know everything. I tell my kids all the time, I actually don't know. I don't know everything. We are all learning. Like, even the oldest person on earth is still learning something. I think it's damaging to set up a dynamic where they start to think we know everything. It's not good because we don't want them to have this feeling, right? That like there is this final destination. Like, no, everyone's learning.
And I think a lot of that happens with our generation when, you know, we grew up with that environment where our parents were really our entire world and they made it out like they knew everything. So, of course, we believed it as children. We didn't know better, right? And then we get to adulthood and we're like, oh my goodness, what were my parents telling me this entire time? You know, and it's not to discount like their knowledge or anything like that. It's just, you know, being honest about the fact that we don't know certain things and that we are still learning and all that is so powerful, I feel. So that's great. Yeah. Oh, we have a follower who said, I don't know and I'll find out. Love it. Yeah. So that's definitely the language that we want to try and pass on to our kids so that they can feel empowered to say that as well the next time that they're in such a situation. So, okay, we've talked about yelling, we've talked about, you know, being in the heat of the moment and things like that. But what about disciplining? You know, how do we discipline our kids without raising our voice? Like, is it even possible? How do we do the essential, like, be firm yet be kind approach?
Yeah, love this question. Okay, let's go. So, what is really important to start with is our understanding of the word discipline. So I think for most of us, when we think of the word discipline, we think of like laying the smack down. Like someone with more authority and more power is going to whack you and teach you and scold you about how what you did was wrong. That is our idea of discipline. And I think about discipline completely differently. So prior to becoming a journalist, I was actually an English lit major. And I think English lit major, journalism, it tells you a lot about like how much I value words and how much I believe in the power of words. So for me, if you want to really understand the word discipline, you got to go back and understand the original meaning of discipline, the root of the word. So discipline is actually from Old Latin. Before it became an English word, it was Old Latin. And what it meant was closer to the idea of a disciple, where someone is in the midst of formation, someone is, you know, not quite who you want them to be yet, and they're in the midst of formation. And the role of discipline is actually to teach. So it is not to scold or to make someone feel bad, it is to actually teach. And if we think about discipline that way, it actually makes a lot of sense, because oftentimes if our kids have done something that we don't want to do, it's not a preferred behavior, what we want to do is actually teach them what's the alternative. So what can they do instead, right? Scolding and shouting doesn't actually teach them something different. It teaches them to be afraid of you, but it doesn't give them any skills to do things differently next time. So if we're clear on the word discipline meaning to teach, then it can reframe what it looks like. So your question earlier was like, is it even possible to discipline without yelling? And I'm like, well, if we think of discipline as teaching, it is not only possible, it is imperative. Because imagine if your teachers just shouted at you the whole class, would you learn anything? No, right? You would be so frightened. Your nervous system would be in this high alert state. And we know that kids don't learn when they're in a high alert state. Everybody, not just kids, everybody learns best when they feel safe, when they feel seen, when their emotional level is calm, we learn best. Same when we're at work. If we constantly think our boss is like going to scold us anytime soon, always seeing the worst in us, we're not going to perform at our best because we're acting from a fear state, a frightened state. So same for our kids. If we want them to truly learn skills to do things differently next time, then we have to start from a safety state. We actually don't want to yell because that pushes them into a corner. It pushes their rational brain off because now their survival brain is on. Now they're just like, ah, I gotta like save myself, instead of, oh, okay, I have a skill to learn. So I think it's really important. So for example, right, if your kid is, I don't know, let's say you have a really young kid, and they're like biting people or swiping glasses off or whatever, just scolding and be like, don't bite, doesn't change the skill. Like they have learned nothing. But if we think about it as like, okay, we have to learn, they have to learn something, we have to teach something, then it becomes very clear that we have to tell them, okay, what do you do instead? And how we tell them has to be very calm, very even, and in control. We are the authority figure here. It's important that that hierarchy is that we are an authority figure. We're not their friends, we're not their best friends, we are an authority figure, and we say it with calm. So it's just very, Dr. Becky, she calls it sturdy leadership, which I love. I love that term. And so it's like telling the child, yeah, I see you want to bite. Maybe your mouth is feeling really itchy or something. I will give you a teether. You can bite this. Can't bite people. That's really painful. But it's not, hey, don't bite, very naughty, huh? You bite one more time, I smack you. Don't teach them anything. The whole difference is how we are saying it and what we're saying. So the teether comes in or some kind of alternative, or you're like, oh, is your mouth feeling itchy? Like snacky? Do you want a snack? Like what's going on? I wonder why you are biting, starting with curiosity. And then the way we say it is very calm. It's very, I see this thing is happening. I'm going to help you. This is what you can do instead. I won't permit biting, right? It's very different from like coming in with a smackdown. So it is absolutely possible to discipline, i.e. to teach, without yelling and without getting harsh. And not only is it possible, it's actually essential. And I think one nice thing is to always just kind of reflect in our minds, like, okay, if I were a teacher, not a discipline master, as we think about it, if I were a teacher, how would I teach this? Then I think that's a lot more powerful than coming in with like, okay, discipline, I need to score, I need to teach them a lesson. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. Okay, I'm going to take it one step further. And like, you know, if a situation happened like that in front of family members, which, you know, happens all the time, if there's a grandparent nearby and they're looking at you like, hey, you don't say anything. Why you don't want to? Yeah, I like it on me. Or, you know, how... Oh my God, I can already imagine it. How do you then focus on that direct connection, okay, with your child? You're doing it this way and all that. And then you've got this external voice being in the way. How do you then direct, or I don't know, say it to them? So you basically have to like do a bit of respectful parenting on this other person also. So how do you navigate a situation like that?
Yeah, so number one, judge for yourself if your in-laws, your parents, are people who would be receptive to your message, right? That's fundamentally really important, because if they're not, it doesn't matter what you say. You could literally be like Barack Obama with the most eloquent speech. They're still not going to buy it, right? But if you sense that, okay, they might be open to listening, then definitely have a talk with them. Be like, blame it on me. That's what my clients do. They're all just like, you know, there's this parent educator. She taught me this thing, and now I'm trying this. So you're not saying... Because a lot of times elders get really upset when they feel like, ah, you think you know better than me, is it? I raised 10 grandchildren, you think you can do better, right? Like they get very, very annoyed when it sounds like we're critiquing them. So we put the blame on me. You just say, no, actually, I learned this other thing. This person was saying da 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 da. And then a lot of times elders will defer to like some kind of trusted authority. So then you just quote the NUS Yale study. You just quote, and they don't want an Ang Mo study, they want a local study. So you quote the NUS Yale study. And then you're like, you know, actually there was this study, you know, that NUS Yale did that said da 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 da. So you kind of make sure that you're not saying it as I know better than you. We do want to respect our elders, and we don't want to diminish all their efforts. You know, for all their warts, they actually did really awesome. Really awesome when you consider how harsh their upbringing was, right? So you don't want to discredit that either. So you want to put the blame on me, on a study. You want to say, I've actually learned something different. That's if they are receptive. If they are not receptive, I always tell my clients, you need to focus on what you can control. You cannot live your life based on how someone else thinks you should live your life, because you're always going to fail. You're not going to be doing the parenting you truly want to do. And you're not going to be able to like, communicate and tell them what you truly want to tell them. You are caught in an impossible position. You're setting yourself up for failure, because whether someone wants to understand and believe what you're saying or not, it's not up to you. It's up to them, right? So don't give away your power. So just accept that, okay, unfortunately, would it be better if everyone was aboard? Yeah, sure. But if they're not, it's okay. Your child just needs one person. They only need you. So you just remind yourself, okay, I am a parent. It's called parenting. I have to be the parent for my child. It's not caring about others-ing. It's not caring about my mother-in-law-ing, right? It's parenting. So who is the one who needs my help right now? It's my child. It does mean you have to do a lot of inner work on yourself. It's easier said than done. It is easier said to like, okay, you know what? Just focus on your child, da-da-da-da, than to actually do it when the pressure is on you. And then later they're talking about how you're such a bad mother, la, you know, telling your husband why you married this kind of person, don't know what they're doing with my grandchildren. It's difficult. I'm not going to say it's easy. However, if we have already decided we want something different from our kids, then we have to accept we will be different from everyone. If everyone else were doing it, we wouldn't be having this conversation today, right? We would have a different generation of parents, but we don't. And so we have to accept if we want different outcomes, we have to have different input. And the different input will make us look weird. And that's where the inner work happens, where we have to accept and understand, okay, why am I doing this? Is this important enough for me to deal with this kind of family friction? Do I have the resources within me to say, yes, I'm willing to do this? You know, and I'm not saying that there's one right answer. For some people, maybe you really, really super, super, super need your parents to watch your kids every day. And if that's the case, then you say, okay, when they're at your house, hey man, I defer to you. But then you also say, well, then I'm going to make sure 10 times sure that when you are with me in my house, when you are with me in my company, if you live with your parents, that every interaction counts. And that's why it's even more important to make sure you educate yourself, close that knowledge gap, and then start practicing. Remember, the intention to do differently is very different from the actual doing. I know this because I went through it myself. So I think it's really important that we kind of give ourselves the attention we need to say, okay, I accept it's going to be hard. Don't expect it to be easy.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I think the worst part especially is when it's really during that situation itself. And it's already so high pressure because your child just did this thing that you have to address. And then also you've got somebody externally saying like, you know, oh, I think you should probably do something about that, you know. But what I find, especially with parents and in-laws, if you give them enough time, I'm glad to see that a lot of the older generation are actually getting more and more accepting and understanding as well of the, you know, new age modern parenting techniques that we are doing these days. Like, I'm really glad to see a lot more grandparents being, you know, very receptive. You know, in there's always a lot of pushback in the beginning. They're like, why are you doing that? Like, you should be just scolding them from the beginning. You don't say anything. Later when they get older, it'll be worse, you know. You know, it's always like that. But after a while, they really see the effects of, you know, the improvements that they see themselves in how the children behave afterwards. And it's really heartening to see how they are a lot more accepting these days, I feel. So that's a really good point.
Yeah. And also if you're a parent and you really feel that you must say something about it, like you have to make sure that they know you're doing something, you can always say, yeah, I'll talk to them later about it. Like, I want to talk to them in private, or I will address it later. No point doing it now. He's not in the brain space to accept what I'm saying or to hear what I'm saying. And a lot of times, you know, when elders tell us something, they just want to make sure that they've said their piece. And they just want to make sure that you're going to do something about it. What you do is totally a different story, right? But they just want to feel that, okay, they were heard as well, and that they got to inject their own opinion. And that's okay. They're allowed to do that, right? We get to choose what we do going forward. And like you said, I think one of the most difficult things as a parent is to parent in a certain way, trusting that it will work out, right? We don't see the results immediately, but we do know, because the science shows us, that there are detrimental effects parenting the harsh way. So we know the only option is this other way if we don't want the detrimental effects. And we just have to trust that it's going to happen, right? But the beautiful thing is, when it does happen, when your child is so different from every other child out there, when your relationship with your child is so different and everyone else can see it, that's when the elders are going to be like, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, true, true. Very good, very good. And then when they start becoming the proud grandparents because their grandchildren are XYZ compared to other grandchildren, then they'll start to see the fruits of it. You know, at the start, my dad was quite skeptical about this way of doing things. But as my kids have grown older, and with the comments that their friends say when they meet my kids, now they're just like my biggest supporters. Honestly, my parents like are so supportive of the work I do, even though at the beginning they were like, you know? So I agree with you that not all parents, I don't want to sell this like everyone's going to be like this, but for some parents, you'll be surprised how quickly they come around once they start seeing results.
Yeah, it also helps when there's a lot of interaction between the grandchild and the grandparent also. And, you know, they will realize after a while that actually, yeah, I mean, like, we don't want to be always in this high pressure environment of like screaming, yelling and all that. So maybe this new age, modern, respectful parenting thing that the kids nowadays are doing is actually really good. Yeah. So thank you so much, Kelly. I think that's a really great wrap up to our conversation. We've shared like, oh my God, so many amazing nuggets of information that we can take away from this conversation, which we will condense into, you know, smaller bite-sized points for everyone to listen to as well. So I think, you know, now, Kelly, you have the floor. Of course, like, we are huge fans of your book. I've got it right here. Yes, it's amazing. If you have not read it yet, you really must. It's called The World May Say This, But I Believe That. And it's so... It has amazing representation of like all the different cultures, ethnicities, and different abilities as well in Singapore and beyond. And the language in there is so encouraging, so empowering. And just like the page that you showed with both the mom and the child crying, so heartening to see that, you know, it's very relatable as well, even if there have been people who see it and say like, oh, I didn't expect that there will be, you know, imagery of like also parents crying and stuff. But eventually we realized like, you know, we are those people too. So yeah. So Kelly, where can people find you? How can they learn more about your courses if they want to better themselves and all of that good stuff?
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you for the opportunity to share. So if you are interested, you can follow me at juicy.parenting. It's my Instagram account. I've committed to myself a reel a day, like a post a day. So there's always parenting tips, like fresh tips coming out. And I specifically focus on Asian parents because I think we deserve targeted support. We shouldn't just take like Western stuff and then just try and apply. So Instagram is a good place. I think also every time I do chats like these, more questions actually bubble up. And then obviously there's no time. So I do have a free 30-page guide. It's called the Asian Parenting Guide, where I answer the top 10 questions that parents ask me. So Asian parents in particular ask me as a parent educator. So if you're interested in that, you can just comment on any of my posts. Just go back and comment top 10, and then there'll be an automated message sent to you, and then you can download it. So that one's really good because I think if this chat has raised a question in your mind, you will be like, huh, but now I have a question about siblings, or now I have a question about my in-laws. Now that you talked about elders, I want to ask about this. Chances are your question is answered in there, or it will give you a good place to start. So that is another good place. The last thing I would say is I do have a course called Juicy Parenting Foundations. It has all these frameworks. So there is a framework on handling any tantrum. There's a framework on how to repair and apologize effectively. There's a framework on how to be a respectful parent in general. Like, what are the principles you need to know? And the first part of the course is very science-based. It's very much about like, why do we need to do this? And it helps to address not just our child, but ourselves, why this is important and why do we melt down the way we do? And then the second half goes into the how-to, where I teach my three juicy frameworks. So the course is good. I also have a membership, but it's closed right now. The next time we open, we will be running this thing called Asian Parent Week, which we ran last year. It's super fun. It's really good. Basically, you get access to 5 days of very short, under 20-minute lessons from me. And then if you would like, you can continue as a member after, where you get ongoing parent coaching. I think this part's really important because when I was studying this stuff, I was just doing courses. It was very difficult because often the instructor would say something and be like, okay, I'm going to try this with my kid. And then I'll try it. I'm just like, oh, it kind of didn't really pan out the way the instructor taught. But by then the instructor's gone. I don't have any chance to talk to them or ask them a follow-up question and be like, okay, I tried this, but what this happened. So tell me what to do next. And so when I started my business, Juicy Parenting, I was like, okay, I need to have an ongoing coaching component where people can come to me and be like, me and my team, and be like, wait a minute, you said this in the course, but this happened. So how? And I think that part's important because not just because you're getting ongoing coaching, but you're also with like-minded parents, like like-minded Asian parents in the community. Because one thing's for sure, if you want to parent this way in Asia, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to stay the course. It's very worth it. And it's very simple, actually, once you learn what to do. It's very, very simple. But it's difficult to implement because you feel like you're the only crazy person doing it. And so it's very, very hard to keep going if you don't have people around you who are also doing it. And then you look around, you're like, okay, we're good. Versus if you try and do it by yourself, but you look around and everyone's doing that, you're just like, okay, I feel like the crazy one. So the membership is great. Unfortunately, it's closed right now. But if you keep 19th of April in your mind. 19th of April. It's the start of Asian Parent Week. We're going to start marketing it. Oh, sorry, 19 May. Oh my gosh. 19 April, we're going to start marketing it. 19 May. Sorry, Asian Parent Week is 19 May that week. So I think that would be a good way if you're interested in like ongoing coaching.
Great. That's amazing. Yeah, I think that would be a great way to for people to have like all this bite-sized info at their fingertips for a whole week. And then, you know, they can always contact you as well. Follow Juicy Parenting if you haven't already. Kelly's account is amazing. You will find nuggets in every single video that will address everything that has to do with parenting kids in Singapore and beyond. So that's, you know, that's really amazing. So thank you so much, Kelly. If you are interested, just find this video back on our on our feed after this, and then we'll also be posting some smaller, shorter, bite-sized nuggets of info once this is all done. So this has been Parenting Playbook. Thank you for joining me, Shaz, and also Kelly Tay from Juicy Parenting. Stay tuned for the next Parenting Playbook session. Thank you everybody for joining us, and if you have any further questions, you can always send us a DM, comment, anything like that, all over our feed. Yeah, thank you, Kelly.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Honey Kids Asia podcast, bringing you the Parenting Playbook. We hope you found our conversation helpful. Don't forget to catch our upcoming Instagram live sessions, where we'll dive into more important topics with experts and parents of diverse backgrounds. Head to @honeykidsasia. Honeykids Asia on Instagram for updates and to sign up for the countdown to our next live sessions. All the details can be found in the show notes. For more parenting tips and resources, head to honeykidsasia.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.